purport by Srila Prabhupada. If one continuously sprinkles drops of ghee on a fire, the fire will not be extinguished, but if one suddenly puts a lump of ghee on a fire, the fire may possibly be extinguished entirely. Similarly, those who are too sinful and have been born in lower classes are allowed to enjoy sinful activities fully, for thus there is a chance that these activities will become detestful to them and they will get the opportunity to be purified. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhuditananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Shri Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Interesting philosophy, just listen to it. My dear king, if an agricultural field is cultivated again and again, the power of its production decreases and whatever weeds are sown there are lost. Just as drops of ghee on a fire never extinguish the fire, but a flood of ghee will. Similarly, overindulgence and lusty desires mitigate such desires entirely. He is no longer a yogi who literally practiced this philosophy and built a institution around it. It was very popular. The idea is that you become self-realized by sense gratification. That's not exactly what Shukadeva Goswami is saying here. He's saying that if you indulge in sense gratification, then ultimately the sense gratification may become detestable to you, and then you'll take up spiritual life in earnest. You don't become liberated by sense gratification. You become liberated by spiritual practices. Sometimes restraining a person or even just giving regulated sense gratification or small drops, like here the example is going to move, drops of ghee on a fire doesn't satisfy. You let people go. As Srila Prabhupada here says, that those who are too sinful and have been born in lower classes, so these are for lower classes of people, these are not brahminical people, and Srila Prabhupada qualifies the statement, says that they may. So he says, if one continuously sprinkles drops of ghee in a fire, the fire will not be extinguished. But if one suddenly puts a lump of ghee on a fire, the fire may possibly, it was not to just say may, but it says may possibly, be extinguished entirely. Similarly, those who are too sinful and have thus been born in the lower classes are allowed to enjoy sinful activities fully, for there is a chance, again, that these activities will become distasteful to them and they will get the opportunity to be purified. In other words, the sequence is that they're allowed to engage in sinful activities, and then if they're allowed to engage in sinful activities, then those sinful activities may become detestful to them, and when it becomes detestful, then they get the opportunity. Prabhupada then says positively, then they will get the opportunity to be purified. The context is that Varnashrama Varcharata Shram Shri Hari Potoshana, that the principles of Varnashram, which are being described here, are meant to regulate sense gratification. The previous verse said, if one acts in his profession according to his position and modes of material nature and gradually gives up these activities, he attains the nishkama stage. So Varnashram is meant to give people engagement with the modes of material nature, with the material world, in a very regulated and structured way. And the regulations have to be such that material desires decrease. Preferably that by the end of lifetime, one can able to, then as Narada Muni says, give them up completely. That someone has completely given them up. And that means 50 years of age. So So practically speaking, from, and then as he's going to begin the next chapter, Brahmacharya Guru Kule Vasa Danto Guru Oritan, it starts at Brahmacharya. So from that age of 5 or 6 until the age 50, in other words, 45 years, one could come to the stage where sense gratification is completely detestable, so one gives it up. One fully concentrates oneself on self-realization and on spiritual practices. But it doesn't necessarily work for everyone. So who doesn't it work for? To those who are too sinful. Who fits into Varnashram? Those who are in caste. There's the outcasts and there's the in caste. So Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, they all accept regulations. And then the Malechas and the Chandalas and the Untouchables and these people, but they are not in society. They're outside society. They live in forests, generally. And they're in very, very restricted places. They're in restricted places so that they don't actually contaminate those others who do accept a framework of restriction. That's what society is based on. Society means, even in our legal society, here we're living in the UK, what makes this a society, what makes it those who are living here actually citizens or members of that society, that is that they accept the, well, there's no constitution, there's just the Magna Carta. But anyways, there's laws. This country doesn't have a constitution. It has laws, but it doesn't have a constitution. But the laws are the framework. And if you accept that law, then you can be a citizen of this country, and if you live within the framework that the laws give. And as soon as you move outside the framework, you're outside society. You're either in jail, or you get deported back to wherever you came from. One of the two, but you can't stay here. And in that sense, in Krishna consciousness, we also talk about society or social development. Social development really starts with establishing what the framework is. So English law establishes a certain framework. You like it, then you fit in. You don't like it, you can make proposals to Parliament, but if they don't change the law that you don't like, then you have to like it. It's not even a question of you don't like it. You have an option. That's why you have a police force and an army. Because ultimately laws don't mean anything unless they're enforceable. And that's where, in one sense, our social development becomes very weak. Because if you don't really have muscle, especially in Kali Yuga, then everyone will just break your laws. And when you break laws, then you have anarchy. And then you don't have a structure anymore. You don't have a society. So a group of individuals don't make social network. A social network means people, just like nowadays, the social networking is very common. Everyone's on all different types of social network sites. But it's anarchy. There is no common ground. There is no common framework. So it's not social. It's not even animal, because animals also are, they, for them, certain laws are imposed upon them. Their behavior is restricted by the modes of material nature. So unless that framework there, unless that structure is there, then you don't have society. And it just like a liquid, if there's no container to hold it, it just flows away. So the Varnashram structure is for those people who accept, but there will always be people who are too sinful or who are just too weak. Too weak means too sinful, or Prabhupada says, born in lower classes. What do you do with them? You can't go the way of Hitler's solution was eliminate them. In other words, people who are sort of outside the social norm, namely gypsies, homosexuals, Jews, the mentally unstable, and so on. You just gas them. You do away with them. That's not a very civilized way of dealing with it. But they also have to be dealt with. And in order to deal with them, they also need to know that there's a sword over them. Because ultimately they're so uncontrolled that unless they know that there's a king like Parikshit Maharaj who's going to come, if they step outside of their boundaries, even though they're allowed to satisfy their senses, not in the way that civilized people do, but they can't make a propaganda, they can't spread it. They do it within the confines of whatever the particular restriction is, and the restriction may be like Megrari. You want to kill anyone that you want to kill, you want to eat anything, you can do that. But you can't live in our city, you have to go live in the forest. Srila Prabhupada would often say that even though meat-eating was sort of always current and was there in Calcutta, but it wasn't like something that was out in the open. It was in a very restrictive area where there were meat shops where you have to go. And it was something that was, you don't make a thing of it. Just like now, if you walk into any shop, then it's out there as a product that people are proud of. We're proud of our products. Unfortunately, right at our entrance, we've got people advertising their products. It's inconceivable. In 1969 or 1970, I was, at that time I hadn't joined, and I went to work in Colorado from Montreal, and I drove there in my Volkswagen van with my wife and my dog. And I was working in a mine. And at that time, I remember entering into Denver. It was in Denver, just outside of Denver, in Golden. And I remember driving into Denver, and McDonald's was advertising. And at that time, as I remember, it says 14 million sold. What's the number now? Does anyone know? Because I remember it's gone into the billions. Yeah. Anyway, that used to be, I don't know, it's no longer there. It used to be always under the number 40, and they would always keep updating it. You know. And then if you consider I don't know whether it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Srila Prabhupada, and the purport says that for every hair on the body of a cow, 10,000 years in hell, that's a phenomenal amount of karma. I mean, you know, they're counting it, but they don't know what they're counting. If you figure that there's 10,000 hairs, a million hairs on the body of a cow, and you multiply that by 10,000, and if someone's quick on arithmetic, and then on top of that, billions sold, someone's spending an awful lot of time in hell. Or a lot of people are. The Megrari, that's fine, but you have to stay in the forest. And you have to live in the forest, and you can't infect others. And once again, of course, here it was Narada Muni. Narada Muni's extraordinary spiritual power was able to bring Megrari to the stage of wanting to practice spiritual life and to give up sinful activity. So this is my life. What do I do? He says, and how did Narada Muni? Narada Muni is sort of the tactic that Christians use, which is you scare someone to death. So he showed him hell. All these animals are waiting for you. So just like with McDonald's, you got all these cows waiting in line for you in the long, long queue. They're going to trample you. So you've got all these animals that you killed. And so he actually got scared. Artha jignasur, artha tigyani. So he got scared. Of course, being scared into practicing spiritual life is also not a path to liberation. It's a path to taking up spiritual life. But then as Krishna says, Tesham Gyani Nitya Yuktam Eka Bhaktir Vishishyate. From there, at least, one should come to the platform of wanting to know about the Absolute Truth. And ultimately, you have to come to the platform of pure devotional service, of wanting to please Krishna. And then sadhana works. Otherwise, this fire brimstone preaching, it doesn't work. It in itself does not purify anyone. But perhaps it can lead one to the path of purification. So for these type of people, yes, sense gratification. However, Srila Prabhupada constantly qualifies the statement, might, perhaps, he uses the word may, possibly, a chance. And for me, at least, the implication there is that they may get sufficiently frustrated by this process of sense gratification, because it can be quite disgusting. I mean, I don't want to make any comparisons, but and I don't have any personal experience nowadays, but I know, for instance, when we're driving up from Soho Street the other night through Camden Town, great place for Sankirtan, and but boy, is it ever a tamagoon. And what they call sense gratification nowadays compared to our days is really, really tamasic. You have to be in illusion in order to think that that's sense gratification. I can understand what's going on in the heavenly planets, but this is like really low. And it's only the power of yesterday Gauri Prabhu made that statement. We're talking over lunch. It was a wonderful lunch. I'm counting them because Srila Prabhupada came to a stage where he said, I gave up sleeping, now I've finally given up eating. So there's going to be a point where I'm going to have to decrease and give up. That was one of the benefits of being in the UK for 25 years. I ate well. I can't complain. It's many, many a memorable lunches. There were some immemorable ones as well, but mostly they're all very memorable. What was I saying? Say that again. Oh, yes. That we're talking about just the easy access to nowadays people have to pornography and everything that means. Maybe they'll get tired of it. And then I said, they're never going to get tired of it. This is what keeps people in the material world. And they're never going to get tired of it because Maya Devi is Krishna's illusory potency. And the only thing that's more enchanting than Krishna's illusory potency is Krishna. So Mama Maya Duratyaya. And they'll never get out of it. They'll never burn up. The only chance, at least for me, these qualifying words mean that like Megrari, if they come in contact with a devotee, that this frustration sort of brings them to the association with a devotee. Otherwise, well, we have experience. Sometimes we take a vow, I'm never going to do this again, but we do it again. We get frustrated, but then unless that frustration leads you somewhere, unless it leads you to the association of Vaishnavas, to the holy name, but even the holy name alone, without knowing what to do with it and how to chant it, then one falls back again. So, aruya krichena param padam tata. And even the liberated will fall back down again. Even the gyanis will fall back down again. Unless they, yini ravindaksha vimuktamaninas, getting to the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet means that you get the association of Vaishnavas. Without that Vaishnava association, it doesn't work. Yesterday in the evening, I was speaking to someone, and because I was just looking ahead, this next verse is a very important verse that comes. It's the last verse in this chapter. And then the beginning of chapter 12 comes, and there's the Brahmachari Gurukula verses there. And someone was asking, isn't it the Brahmachari's business to preach? And then I quoted the verse, and I said, no, Brahmachari's business is to serve the spiritual master. It means that he may wash pots, or he may preach, or he may stand on his head, or do so many things. Well, not that. Yesterday I was expanding on what Prabhupada said when you were citing Srila Prabhupada's point about how 50% is for the book fund, because when Tejas Prabhu was in Hungary, he told me that he told him in Delhi 75% for the book fund, 25% for temple, and you worry how you're going to eat. Sometimes Prabhupada had, his principle was the same, everything for Krishna, nothing for me, but it was either 50-50 or 75-25. But I made this point, if nowadays we'd say such a thing, okay, brahmacharis, all the money that comes in, 50% goes for books, 50% goes for the temple, and what's for breakfast, that's your problem. We'd get registered with the police for abuse. Yeah, you can't, unfortunately, times are changing. And it's not, I always used to diverge off of themes, because Prabhupada diverged off the themes. The problem is, I'm getting old and I'm forgetting the theme I diverged off of. Where were we? Huh? And I'm also getting a little deaf as well. You did correct me in the process. Yes, thank you. Yeah, it's really low. But, yes, that's Maya Devi's potency. And she has that ability. So, and Prabhupada would repeat over and again, how does a pig enjoy what it's doing? And it's enjoying it. What to speak of, and the worms, and the bugs, and the flies, and everything else, because they're Maya. And as attractive as Krishna is, we get an idea of how powerful the material energy is. So vilajamananam yasya. Krishna's shadow is Maya Devi, or Maya Devi standing in Krishna's shadow. And she's very, very powerful. So she has this ability to both draw our attention, to cast us into illusion, and to keep us in illusion. And she'll keep them in illusion forever with the same thing, with the same sexual attraction, with the same material attachments. In fact, it's sometimes quite amazing how uncreative, say, in the example of a Krishna consciousness movement, how uncreative devotees are in the ways they fall down. Isn't it? They fall for the same old trick. There's no... My Devi must get bored. At least in previous ages, Bharat Maharaj was a deer. Now that's creative. Or an apsara. That's... But in Kali Yuga, people settle for the same old thing. And... So in order to actually be free from the influence of this material energy, mamevaya prapadyante mayamitam tarantite, only attraction to Krishna is powerful enough to overcome attraction to the material energy. Therefore, this raga dvesha vimuktastu vishayan indriyascharan, therefore this repulsion, it doesn't work, it's not enough. In other words, you can't just be repulsed by sense gratification because it'll be temporary, because there isn't actually that real attraction. So Krishna begins the seventh chapter saying, Maya Sakta Mana Aparta. So he says, Maya Sakta Asakti. He says, unless you have this attraction for me, then it's not going to work. And ultimately, Krishna consciousness means developing attraction for the Lord. So the Varnashram system is ultimately meant for those people who practice spiritual life. They regulate their sense gratification, because when it's unregulated, then there's no possibility for sadhana. Sadhana means regulated spiritual life, like we have. No illicit sex. Doesn't mean no sex, but no illicit sex. So it's regulated. And when you accept the regulation, then that's what the Vedic system is. You accept regulation of the Vedas and great acharyas, and then you can advance in spiritual life. And the result of advancing in spiritual life is Chaita Dharpana Marjanam, is purification of the heart. And the result of purification of the heart is that one then, by association with Krishna, naturally becomes attracted. Because Krishna is Krishna. So Krishna means Krishi Bhuvachaka Shabdo Nasha Nivriti Vachaka. So Krishi means that who's attracting, that unlimited attraction, that unlimited attractive power of Krishna. And only if Krishna attracts us away from the material energy can we actually really give it up. So somehow or another, whether it's these very sinful people that Narada Muni is talking about, and then we should keep in mind, yes, this is a verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, but taken in context, it's not a process of sadhana that Narada Muni is recommending. Oh, well, look here, Narada Muni says that, yes, we can just overindulge and we'll become disgusted with sense gratification, so let's go of the way of that chap who had how many Rolls Royces? I don't know, as many as McDonald's had hamburgers. So he had a lot of Rolls Royces. He died of throat cancer, very painful, at a relatively young age. This is not Srimad Bhagavatam's recommendation. It's part of the 18,000 verses, and picking out this one verse and just making this as the theme of devotional activity then becomes offensive hearing, just like there's offensive chanting. So there's also offensive hearing, selective hearing, taking things out of context is also offensive. We're meant to actually hear things in context. So Srimad Bhagavatam has what is its main theme? It's there in the very beginning, that tadbadeti svayam bhayam, that just by once saying Krishna's name, that's right in the second chapter, so immediately the glorification of Krishna's name is there. And Srimad Bhagavatam ends with nama samkirtananyasya sarva papa pranasanam. It's the last verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Nama samkirtananyasya. So the message of Srimad Bhagavatam is Sankirtan. The message of Srimad Bhagavatam is practicing Nam Sankirtan by regulating one's senses. There are different regulations for different classes of people. For Krishna consciousness movement, we know what the formulas are. Srila Prabhupada makes it abundantly clear in his purports. There may be these types of people, very, very sinful people. But ultimately, it's not the sense gratification that's going to liberate them. But that's when they have that sense of frustration, where do they go? And if the timing's not right, then my Devi will ensure that they go back again to material energy. Then tomorrow, Narada Muni sums up this verse, this chapter, Yasya Lakshanam Proktam Pungso Varnabhigantitam. Very important verse, where he says, because in one sense this is one of the, sort of a key verse that when we talk about what is the qualification for someone being a brahmana, for being a sannyasi, here he says, if one shows the symptoms of being a brahman, kshatriya, vaishya, or shudra, as described above, even if he appears in a different class, he should be accepted according to those symptoms of classification. Very, very important verse. Because in just one fell swoop, it just removes this whole misconception of which has become the modern caste system. If you're not born in a Brahmin family, then you can't be a Brahmin. And Srila Prabhupada would give the example of, what's the example of? Huh? What's the name? What's the name of that? It's that Upanishadic story of who comes to Gautama Muni, yeah. Satyakam Javat, whose mother sends him to Gautama Rishi, accept the spiritual master, and go to study. Gautama Rishi says, I only accept Brahmins. He says, who's your father? He goes back to his mother, says, who's my father? He says, I don't know. If you say you don't know who your father is, that means your mother had liaison with more than just one man, and she doesn't know. So Satyakam Javat went back to Gautama Muni. He says, I don't know. He says, okay, I'll accept you. He says, only a Brahmin could say that. He says, you couldn't. If you weren't a Brahmin, you wouldn't be telling the truth. You wouldn't be saying, in short, that I'm a B, dot, 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 dot. especially in Vedic culture. So he said, and that's what Narada Muni here is also saying, that if someone has the symptoms, lakshana, this word lakshana is an important verse. It comes up in Chaitanya Charitamrita and so on also. When you accept a incarnation according to their lakshana, but yasyala lakshana. And it's important for us also, as Vaishnavas, how do we measure a Vaishnav? How do we measure people? How do we measure someone's qualifications? See what qualifications, attributes they have. And on the basis of that, then we can see, yes, this is what that person is. And then it's very important to know lakshan, to know qualifications, unless one is really aware of a person's qualifications of a thing, you can't identify. So I remember when we were studying chemistry, then what's water, what's gold, what's so they had it's hard, the color, the taste, the touch, the smell. So lakshana, qualities. And on the basis of a quality, you identify something. Similarly, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, is meant to give us what are the attributes of devotional service, what are the attributes of Vaishnavas. Srimad Bhagavatam describes Kanishtha Adhikai, Madhyam Adhikai, Uttam Adhikai. They give qualifications. A Madhyam Adhikari starts with Ishvara Taradhineshu Bhaleshu Viteshucha Prema Maiti Kripa Piksha Yakarosi Samadhyama. Here's Samadhyama. Here's a Madhyam. Ishvara Taradhineshu. So he's very favorably, he's serving the Lord and Prema Maitri. He has loving affection with other devotees and he rejects envious people. And these are good qualifications. And the more attributes you have of something, the more certain its location. Like in trigonometry or geometry, that, you know, if you only have two coordinates, then you haven't really defined a point in two dimensions you have. But in three-dimensional space where we live, you need at least three coordinates in order to really define where is something. So the more coordinates that you have, the more lakshan you have of a thing, of a person, then the better you can actually define that person. So anyway, Narada Muni here says, yes, but if someone shows the quality of Brahman, doesn't matter if he's born in the Brahman family. And this was Srila Prabhupada's whole fight, continued from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. If they're showing the qualifications of Brahman, doesn't matter if they were in family of cow eaters, they were born there, but what are they doing now? And how are they behaving now? And then it doesn't matter what happened in the past, And it was a very interesting conversation about, well, Prabhupada, what about the future? And then Prabhupada would say, gives the example of food. He says, you can say, well, what happens to this food if it goes bad in the future? So it may go bad, but eat it now because it's good now. So don't worry about the future. Future is hypothetical. The past is the past. But what's the qualification now? And then another important verse starts in the next. Brahmachari Gurukule Vasandanto Guror Hitan. Then he starts off with the four spiritual classes and starting off with the Brahmachari. And then same philosophy. Prabhupada's philosophy is Narada Muni's, everything for Krishna, nothing for me. Both junction of day and night, namely in the early morning, evening, he should be fully absorbed in thoughts of the spiritual master, fire, sun god, Lord Vishnu, and by chanting Gayatri Mantra, should always worship them. Being called for the spiritual master, the student should study the Vedic literatures regularly every day before beginning his studies, and at the end of his studies, the disciple should respectfully offer obeisances unto the spiritual master. And then this is where he says the brahmacharya should go out in the morning and evening to collect alms. In other words, brahmacharya should beg. It says right here, brahmacharya should beg. And he should offer all that he collects to the spiritual master. He should eat only if ordered to take food by the spiritual master. That's another case of abuse. Otherwise, if the spiritual master does not give this order, he may sometimes have to fast. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has these examples of discipleship that are like really, really extreme examples of when the spiritual master tests the disciple. Of course, they have to be very qualified spiritual masters. But here, Srila Prabhupada, I'd like to cite this verse, right, that disciple doesn't eat, spiritual master doesn't call you, you don't eat. Of course, we don't have that type of immediate connection necessarily with spiritual master, and prasadam is always ready and waiting. And Srila Prabhupada had a different philosophy. He had a big barrel of gulab jamuns, and any time you got a little overly anxious or passionate, then you could take a gulab jamun just to sort of balance things off. But at least the essence should be there, and that's what's important. We may not necessarily be practicing, because not just for brahmacharya, but when you read about how varnaprasthas are meant to live, I mean, no one lives like that. No one can live like that. But somehow or another, the essence of all of these things we need to actually extract. And part of that essence is that type of unbelievable fidelity to guru. But guru really means the embodiment or the duties which are described in Shastra. Duty. And that's a good portion of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's call to duty. That you have to be dutiful. Sukha dukhe same kritva labha labha jaja. You like it, you don't like it, it feels good, it doesn't feel good. People praise you, people blame you, it doesn't matter. You just do your duty. And if you build Krishna consciousness on being very dutiful, dutiful by whatever the standards that are framed by society that are there within the Krishna consciousness movement. That then actually becomes the basis of Varnashram. There's rules, but obviously people need to adhere to those rules, and dutiful people adhere to rules. And without duty, without being dutiful or dedication to the principles of Dharma, it's not really possible to become Krishna conscious, because Krishna consciousness is much more difficult than that. So you can't sarva dharma amparityaja. You can't give up Dharma unless you've embraced it. Sometimes we want to give it up before we've even embraced it. Yudhisthira Maharaj lied, I don't have to tell the truth. But first you have to be so truthful like Yudhisthira Maharaj. And just that example is there. It's there in the Mahabharata. Our Mahabharata expert is not here, Krishna Dharma Prabhu, but It's there in the Mahabharata. Yudhisthira Maharaj says, and it just gives an idea of the level of what it means, sarva dharma parityaja. It's not a small thing. He says, in my whole life, I've never said, thought, or performed a sinful activity. So when you become that dharmic, then if Krishna tells you, now you give up dharma, then you can give it up. And Arjuna was no less. He was no less than Yudhisthira Maharaj. So, yes, we need to really embrace those principles of dharma, particularly here, Varnashram Dharma. Srila Prabhupada emphasized that a lot. And it doesn't really just, Varnashram Dharma doesn't really mean becoming a farmer. It really means living in the city, but embracing a defining set of principles that framework our society, which means that those people who accept it voluntarily are in, and those people who don't are out. You never get a society that embraces everybody. Ultimately, you don't have it. But the problem is that we're not a state. We're a church. Or we're a charity. And we've got laws, but we don't have any policemen. And when Brahmins have to act like policemen, it's a really thankless task. It's a really thankless task. And that's a real quandary. Therefore, just being a religion and establishing society, it only works if you actually have legal power. And it only works when you become a state. And then, because without being able to enforce laws, especially in Kali Yuga, there's no reason in the world why people will follow them. It's sometimes complaints that people have, I don't know, I can say things like GBC body or others pass much legislation, but then there's no, when someone breaks it, what happens? And of course we can pass some more resolution or we take some type of action, some type of ecumenical action, you know, you're banned from a temple, but it just doesn't, that's about as much as a church can do. You can't come into the temple. What else can we do? And certainly the society that we live in isn't going to put someone in jail for going to McDonald's, which some people may be doing on their way out of here because we didn't fulfill their dietary requirements when they came to the manor. Anyway, I should stop talking. 8:30, right, Shuri? Giraj Maharaj? There are already 100-plus deviations. If I've deviated, could you add to the list? Could you make any comments? Would you like to comment on this interesting principle of